Welcome in to another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Jeff Cohen. We have an exciting episode today. I just got back yesterday from spring training at Camelback Ranch, where I was able to spend 4 days doing nothing but White Sox coverage, talking to players, talking to Pedro Grifol, talking to everybody in the beat writers and all of the above. So we're going to talk nothing but spring training today. I did some interviews with prospects, some interviews with major league guys. We're just going to dive into it. Just get into everything that I saw in Arizona and try and just provide all of you with an experience and understanding of how camp is going for the White Sox. We're two weeks out from the team heading to Chicago, exactly 2 weeks out, I think. The 25th, they're all heading to Chicago. So we're approaching baseball season. It's a really exciting time to be a White Sox fan, to be a baseball fan, and we are just going to talk everything spring training. So first of all, Jeff, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Looking forward to the podcast. I've got 1,000 questions for you, Elijah. I'm as curious as probably any of our listeners.
And I'm ready to answer them. So let's get into it. What do you got for me first, Jeff? Let's start it off.
Well, I know you got to see a lot of the prospects, and I look forward to getting into that in great detail. But first, I want to ask some of the obvious questions, which is about the Major League club. And are there reasons for optimism this season?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It's a good place to start. And I tried to kind of convey some of my thoughts on that throughout on Twitter throughout this week. If you haven't gotten a chance, everybody should go check out everything I posted, ElijahEV8 on Twitter. And then, you know, it feels good there. I think the clubhouse is in better spirits than it was last year. And I think the energy at camp is really locked in. I think generally the club is at the point of trying to just find that base, right? And find what that fundamentally sound consistency looks like at this point in the spring in order to try and translate that into the season. So while the team is not going to be great, I don't expect a playoff team. I don't think this is a team that's ready to, you know, compete for a division title or even beyond that a playoff time. But, you know, I think there's more to like this year than there was last year. And I think there's a lot more excitement around this club and a lot more positive energy. I think the team is kind of embracing this underdog mentality and this, you know, we have more than people are giving us credit for, because generally the national consensus is, you know, the White Sox are going to be one of the worst teams in baseball. And I think I'm not saying that's necessarily untrue, but I think the organization as a whole is just saying, who cares? And they're just focused on developing their fundamentals and playing sound, consistent baseball. And that's something we have not seen over the past two seasons. And that is going to make this team so much more enjoyable to watch from a fan perspective than in the past few years where it's been, you know, just really sloppy, honestly.
So last year, for example, we saw really poor plate discipline. We saw really lousy defense, and we saw a really low overall baseball IQ. So you're really optimistic in all three areas that there will be big improvements.
Yeah, I think the plate discipline is something that I think there's still a handful of players that need to really hone in on, and I think that's definitely a focus. I'm not as confident in that aspect. I still think there's some players on this team that really need to adjust the way they approach their at-bats. Beyond that, I do think the defense is going to be way better. I think we're going to see an entirely different defensive look from this team, just purely based on the acquisitions, right? You look at pretty much every player added to the fold offensively, and they're all strong defensive players. I think the catching tandem has rave reviews, and that's going to change a lot for this organization. I think starting with two catchers that are defensive-minded catchers and are well-regarded for their catching, every single pitcher I talk to is super, super happy about working with both Maldonado and Max Stassi. I think those are two guys that are veterans. They're both known for their defensive work, their receiving skills, their framing, and that's something that's going to take this team at the base level, right? That's going to already elevate the floor of this team. I think having two defensive catchers who run the game and know what they're doing behind the plate already changes so many things for a pitching staff and the defense in general, because the catcher is running the game, right? We all know that catching is a vital position when it comes to just managing the team and managing the defense. And I think both the catchers are clearly veterans and clearly guys that are focused on their defense more than anything. So that's the first step, right? And then beyond that, when you look at other positions around the field, you've got two middle infielders. I think it appears to me right now that Paul DeJong and Nicky Lopez are going to be the opening day middle infield. I think there's been some questions that Lopez could be. I think eventually Lopez will be more of that utility piece that's going to be kind of a nice utility infielder. But I do think he's going to start at second base to open the season. And I think DeJong is basically penciled in as the shortstop for now. So those two guys already a huge difference. They're both natural shortstops. So Nicky Lopez playing second base is already, you know, an elite shortstop who then playing second base is going to be just as good, if not better. And DeJong is someone who's consistently been solid defensively. So I think those two are going to make a big difference up the middle. We know Yoan Moncada can pick it at third base. If he's healthy, he's a phenomenal defensive third baseman, regardless of what he's doing at the plate. And then you go to the outfield, and you look at a position like right field that has been such a gaping hole for so long, offensively, defensively, all of the above, right? You had Andrew Vaughn out there. You had Gavin Sheets out there. You had, you know, Oscar Colas last year, who defensively was really struggling at times. And you got a guy like Dominic Fletcher, who's supposed to open the game. That's just a great fielder. Dominic Fletcher is someone I really enjoyed talking to him. He got a really good mindset just on the game and the way he approaches things, I think. And he's someone who, like, his entire emphasis when I was talking with him was like, I'm going to play fundamental defense. I'm going to hustle. I'm going to add speed. And I'm just going to do all those little things that create a winning ball club and a winning culture. So I think that's something that is really going to take this team to another level, regardless of if it results in wins. It's at least going to be a clean defensive team that has a very, very obvious emphasis on playing sound baseball. And that's going to be something we have not seen over the past, you know, 2-3 years, right?
Well, that's exciting. That would be such a welcome change. And I hope it trickles down to AAA because, frankly, we didn't see a lot of that in Charlotte. And when we had guys like Mark Payton and Zach Remillard, who were so fundamentally sound, it was refreshing to watch. So that's great. And in terms of the catching, I think Chris Getz got a lot of criticism for not letting any of his younger catchers start the season on the roster. But no, you're right. For the pitching staff and all the challenges, you want veteran catchers. Absolutely.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the catching, I think, honestly, at the time, I was high on Stassi, honestly, when they acquired him. And when they got Maldonado, I was like, oh, Maldonado's like 40 years old. But honestly, I think the catching decisions were the best catching decisions possible because Edgar Caro, I'm going to talk about him later, but Edgar Caro is waiting in the wings. He's on the way. He's going to be there eventually. But right now, getting two catchers that are veterans and can help this pitching staff develop is the best possible case scenario. I do not care if Stassi and Maldonado hit 150 this year. I really don't. If those two can be hitting in the eight hole every day, I think it appears to me from what I heard that Maldonado is the starter, but I do think it's going to be a fairly even split. I think that they're both kind of going to get significant time. I think it's going to be more of like a 60-40. It's not going to be, you know, Maldonado starting 80% of games at all. I think there might even end up being a 50-50 with the two of them because I think Stassi has shown himself to be a solid catcher behind the dish. But those two are the big, big step in letting this pitching staff develop and figuring out who your pitchers are going to be moving forward. They're going to really help let the pitchers show them their true selves as opposed to showing, you know, part of themselves without defensive stability. So that's going to be a big difference. I'm definitely heard nothing but good remarks about those two defensively.
You know, people don't know much about Stassi, but I recall when he was a young catcher with the Astros, he could hit. He had a pretty decent bat. And, you know, they were able to trade him. Can't remember who came back in return to Houston, but it was a nice return because he had a lot of value. So hopefully he's healthy and can get back to that form again. Absolutely. Yeah.
Stassi showed flashes for sure. He never really got all that many, you know, full length experience. I think he had a few seasons where he was a large part of the catching tandem in Houston. He was never the full-time starter, but you know, he's someone that has been around and he's going to be solid and he's going to be strong defensively. And if he provides some pop with the bat, great. And if not, I really don't care. I think having those two focus on the pitching staff and really let these young pitchers develop and figure out who the pitchers are long-term is going to be a huge step forward.
Okay. So you got to see a lot of the major league arms and there are a lot of new faces, a lot of veterans, you know, guys, tons of veterans in the bullpen. And even in the starting rotation with guys like Chris Flexen. I'm curious your impressions, both watching a couple of, you know, several games and then talking to a lot of guys. Yep.
Yeah, I was able to talk to pretty much all of the pitchers after they made their starts in the games that I was there for. You know, Michael Kopech is struggling for sure. That's my first takeaway from watching the pitching staff, watching him Wednesday, and then he pitched again earlier today and struggled once again against the Rockies. He has life on his pitches too, which is nice to see because he's getting the velo's higher than it was last year. And he has a little bit more movement on his pitches too. It's just a command thing with him. And I wish I got the chance. He's the one pitcher I didn't get the chance to talk to. So I don't know exactly where his head is at right now. I think he seems very focused. He seems very locked in the locker room and the clubhouse from what I saw. But it's just a command issue. He hasn't been able to find that command. And this has been all of last season that he wasn't really commanding. it seems to me like he's the favorite to kind of be the four starter moving into the season. While the only confirmed, you know, rotation piece is Cease starting opening day. Beyond that, you know, Grifol has not confirmed anybody. It does appear to me that both Eric Fetty and Mike Soroka are pretty much locks in the two and the three spot. And then Kopech is close behind them as a most likely going to make the rotation, but it hasn't been pretty. It really has not been pretty. I think Kopech is just, he's just a guy that just, it almost looks like he's over pitching at times to me. Like he's really trying to force specific spots in the zone, and it's resulting in either a lot of walks or just balls over the middle that are just sitting there hanging. So it's hard. It's hard with him. I'm really hoping he bounces back, but the velo is there, which is nice to see. And he's got some life on his stuff. It's just going to come down to the command. He looks healthy, which is also a big step. It's just really going to come down to how much he can command. Beyond Kopech, right? Cease looks awesome. Dylan Cease looks like Dylan Cease. That was my takeaway from watching him in the game that I got to watch him, and then hearing from him after the game, just him talking directly. He sounds confident. He sounds ready. He sounds just prepared to be Dylan Cease this season. He wants to be the ace. He's there. He's comfortable. He looks like the best version of himself, honestly. He was really happy with his start the other day. I think he wanted a little bit more from his slider. His slider missed a few spots at times, and he hung one curveball that got hit for a home run in the game that I was watching. But again, it was one mistake. I think, you know, Cease is a guy that he doesn't have to rely on that curveball much. I think for him, really using the curveball as a little accent piece and really continuing to make the fastball slider his focus is what he's best at. And that's when he was at his best in 2022, was really just develop, just focus on that fastball slider combo. And he looks good. He looks really good. He looks ready to be the ace of this team for as long as it is, even if the trade, you know, I still think that a deadline trade is most likely when it comes to Cease. But for now, he's the ace of the staff and he looks ready to be that ace.
Yeah, I was reading about Gerrit Cole today, and the first thing that came to mind was Dylan Cease.
Yeah.
Right?
It's hard. I think the Yankees probably will make a push for Blake Snell first because they'd rather spend money than have to trade prospects. But if they don't end up getting Blake Snell, I think there's a really good chance we see him right before the season Dylan Cease trade, which it didn't seem like there were. It kind of seemed 3 days ago that it was like he's going to be at least till the deadline with the Sox, but the Yankees could get desperate. That team needs to win right now. And if Gerrit Cole misses significant time, I would not be shocked to see them re-enter negotiations. And yeah, the White Sox would have leverage in that spot to be able to try and really pry away some of those top guys in the Yankee system. Yeah. Going beyond those two, the two new guys, Eric Fetty and Mike Soroka, both looked great. I got to see both of them pitch games. They both looked really good. They look like, I mean, these are two bounce back guys, right? Fetty's a guy who never found success in the big leagues, was amazing in Korea last season, added this sweeper. That's really, really nice. When he's able to locate that sweeper, it's a really good pitch. And he's also kind of worked his cutter sinker combo to where he's working two different fastballs in two different parts of the zone, especially. So I really like, you know, what I got to see from Fetty. I think he's someone who is a pretty underrated rotation piece, and he's going to be in the rotation all season, probably all of the next two seasons, right? He sounded way happier with his appearance, the second appearance, as opposed to his first one. He said he was just feeling way more comfortable. He liked just the way he was throwing. He was hoping he was working on his location a little bit. So he's been kind of tweaking a little bit of his fastball location. He's trying to work some more inside fastballs, and he's also trying to add a little bit more backdoor off speed to his game. He's trying to throw more sweepers backdoor, which is a really hard pitch to throw for people who don't know. Throwing, you know, the slider movement and a sweeper. The sweeper is a version of a slider, right? And that type of movement, when you're pulling it away from your body, is really hard to get backdoor because you have to start it so far. You're starting it almost, as a right-handed pitcher, right, from Fetty, you're starting it almost all the way in on a guy, like at his body, to then get it to come on that backdoor part of their swing. So that's a really hard pitch to throw. He missed one during the game, and he was laughing about it a little bit, but he seems confident, and he looks like he's ready to go, and he's adjusting things, and he's still trying to figure out kind of how to best use his repertoire, but he also looks really good and looked more comfortable in that second start. And then you got Mike Soroka, who was, you know, one of the best pitchers in baseball in his rookie season, which is crazy. He was second in rookie of the year in 2019 and looked like, you know, the future ace of Atlanta before Spencer Strider was even in the picture at that time. So that's a guy who we've seen pitch at an elite level and looks really healthy this spring. He talked about how he's the healthiest he's been in the last few years right now. He feels good. He's getting comfortable with the team. He's enjoying working with the new catchers. He's learning kind of his sequencing. He's continuing to work on just the adjustments in his pitches and where he kind of wants to attack people and how to best utilize the pitches that he has, because he has some really impressive stuff. and just kind of needs to find it more. You know, the game that I watched him pitch, he admitted that the first inning he couldn't really find what he was looking for, but then he got into his groove the second, third inning, really started to find, you know, where he was doing, not trying to kind of force everything, being patient with it. So he looked good. He also talked to me about how his changeup is something that he's really been focused on, because it's a pitch that he knows can be really good at its best, and that it can play really well off his two seam because it has that kind of same movement profile, but with a different speed to it and a different look to it. So Soroka is someone that is another like really high upside guy. I don't think people realize like how good this guy was a few years ago. And I get that's hard to bank on because it's been multiple years of him either being injured or when he got back last year and he was healthy, he really struggled. But he was open about that and honest, and he was super friendly. One of the nicest guys I talked to, honestly. He was really happy to talk to the media guys and just explain his mindset and everything. So I think he's someone that, you know, those are both guys that are going to be fun to watch, and there's a lot of upside there and not that much downside, right? Like if either of those guys don't perform the way we want them to and the way they want to, right, there's not a lot of loss there. It's kind of just a win. I mean, there's not much to lose. And I think both of them could be really solid rotation pieces and guys that you either with a strong first half, you either consider flipping them if you want to kind of lean further into the rebuild if the team is struggling, or they're both pitchers that you could consider extending. I think Soroka is still a young guy. Fetty's a little bit older, but Fetty's only on a 2-year deal. So they're both players that you could either, if things go well for them, like they have the last few spring starts, right? You could either flip them or you can try and keep them around for a little while longer.
Yep. You know, people don't know much about, or don't remember much about Soroka, but he was Spencer Strider and Kyle Wright before those guys. Yeah,
100%.
He was quite a big deal.
Yeah.
So what about who do you see filling in the rest of the rotation, especially if Kopech doesn't hold on to that spot?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I think those four that I mentioned are probably the four to start. Right now, it seems, from what I heard and from what I saw, it seems like Chris Flexen has the edge on that five spot just because he's a veteran. He's been around. I didn't get to watch him pitch. He pitched the day before I was there. But he looks like he has the edge. I think he's the guy who's kind of expected to get that five spot just because of his reputation, and he's been around and he's looked good in the spring so far. But the two guys that I'm keeping an eye on, and both guys I got to talk to, Garrett Crochet, man, he looks good. I'm very curious to see what happens with Crochet, and he's probably one of the most interesting pitchers on this roster to follow this year because I can't see him cracking the rotation because of the lack of innings. He hasn't thrown many innings over the last few years. He's not built up to be a starter right now. But with that said, he's going multiple innings in spring training. The goal was for him to go at least more than two this past start. When I just watched him the other day, he came in relief, but he pitched 2 1/3. So he felt good. He talked about, you know, trying to just keep things normal. He's sticking to his routine. He's on a 5 days a week throwing schedule where he's really just getting his reps in. He feels good. He was really pretty honest about the fact that his arm like feels good. Like he's not worried about the workload. He thinks he's prepared for it. He's worked all offseason to get his body in shape to throw a lot more innings. And beyond that, you know, we talked about one of the funnier questions was asking him kind of what the next step was. And he said, what I go 2 1/3 innings, getting through three. And I was like, that was very odd. It was just like, he's just kind of taking it day by day. And I think that's the right way to approach things. And I think realistically Crochet, I think opens up as that kind of long relief guy. I think there's a chance he kind of is the piggyback for Kopech or Flexen, depending on whoever doesn't go kind of as long. I think if Kopech struggles, Crochet could become 2-3 innings after Kopech. Or if Kopech comes out to a hot start, then Crochet can come in and throw 3 innings after Flexen throws. Something along those lines I think is most realistic. Or maybe they put him in the rotation and just say, you know, you're only going to go 3-4 innings each day to start the season, but you can just get the starting reps and feel like being a starter. I think he starts in the pen, but I think mid-season Crochet might be getting starts, even if they're not, you know, 6-inning starts, even if it's 4 or 5 innings. He looks like a starting pitcher, and he looks really good. The velo's back up to 99. He's pumping 99 like pretty easily, which is exciting to see. And beyond that, he just looks comfortable. He looked comfortable pitching, and he didn't really last year. I think last year was a struggle for him, and he was kind of just trying to get himself on the field and make it work. And this year he's like, he has a plan. He's focused. He's locked in. He looks good. He wants to be a little more efficient. I think he's still throwing a few too many pitches. He's getting some counts get away from him, getting into a little bit longer counts, which is something he wants to minimize that for sure. But in general, I think Crochet looks like someone who it wants to be a starter and eventually is going to get a shot. I don't think it'll be off the bat, but I think he will get a shot. And then the last guy, our guy, Nick Nastrini, you know, I talked to him a lot. I met him last year and we've stayed in touch. I'm hoping to have him on the podcast soon. But he's a guy who he looks great. I mean, Nastrini right now in camp looks like one of the five best starters in this roster. And I'm not saying there's one particular person he should be over or anything, but he looks like a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. Like that's point blank, like where he's at right now. When I was there, I didn't see him pitch in person because he pitched at a B game that was away, but he talked to me the day after the B game, another two inning outing in the scrimmage game, no runs, one hit, three Ks, just steady. He has not given up a run yet in spring. I think he gave up one run so far in spring training, if I'm right. I should check that, but he's just been consistently really good. And someone that, you know, he looks prepared to pitch in Major League Baseball. From the sounds of it, I don't think he's going to crack the rotation to start the season. It doesn't seem like he's going to. I think he's going to open as the kind of the opening day guy in Charlotte, which is okay. I think that's fine. I get it. Part of me is like, why? But part of me is also like, when you think about it, this season is not about winning. We've talked about this. This season is about growth. So if the way to grow him is to start him in AAA and to bring him up midseason, cool. I can understand that. I think he's good enough to be in the major league rotation immediately. But I don't think he's going to. It sounds to me like he's going to open as the lead guy in Charlotte. And then, you know, if either, you know, a Kopech or a Flexen really struggles, or if there's an injury, then Nick Nastrini would become the kind of the first guy up. You never know, though, honestly. I mean, if he puts together two more starts in spring training and gives up no runs again in both those starts, like, it's hard to make a case for him not being in the rotation the way he's pitched so far, and especially with some of the concerns on the arm with the Crochet and a Kopech. Like, this is a guy who's got bullets in the chamber. Like, he's thrown a lot of innings the last 2 years, but he's got a lot of life on his arm. He looks healthy. He looks good. He looks like somebody that can throw 5-6 innings in a start pretty simply, and he's just been great. So even if he doesn't open, I don't think he's going to open in the rotation. Nastrini's going to be up soon, and he's going to be making starts in Chicago for a while, in my opinion.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right, let's switch gears here and focus on some of the younger guys. But before we do that, you know, they're typically – some of them are getting in games, but a lot of them, like Noah Schultz, for example, are working out in on B games or on the backfield. And I'm curious, what is it like, these backfields where the guys are practicing? You know, are they very accessible, or are there multiple hitting cages, multiple mounds? What is it like?
So I wish I spent more time on the backfields. I spent a good amount of time there, but I kind of, in reflection, I probably should have not even gone to some of the actual games and spent just the afternoons on the backfields, because they're super accessible. I mean, I obviously had more access having media stuff there, but in general, they're really accessible. I don't think people realize how accessible they are. You can go and walk around Camelback and see all four of the backfields with the minor league camp going on, all the minor leaguers, international guys, the young, the single A guys, the double A guys, all of them. There's scrimmage games going on. There's drills going on. There's BP going on. I mean, there's stuff happening there, which is really cool. And something that I think not enough fans honestly know that that's happening, because I get that everybody's focused on the front two fields, the way Camelback's set up, right? For the White Sox camp, there's two fields that are in the front that are public and kind of the first thing you see when you go into the backfield, right? Those two fields are always the major league guys, major league camp guys that are warming up. They're doing their drills. They're hitting BP in the morning. There's guys that are tossing bullpen sometimes along there, right? And then you go back and there's four more fields in kind of a circle, and those are all the minor league camp guys. You got 100 young players that are just working hard. They're throwing, they're doing fielding drills, they're hitting BP, they're doing scrimmages. I got to watch a scrimmage on Saturday, which was great. And it's just a good time. It's very laid back, but it's also like these young guys are working and they're putting the time in and they're getting their chance to just continue to show what they can do and continue to get ready for the season. And that's really what it is. And that was the coolest thing, was coming back there on Saturday and getting to watch Noah Schultz throw live BP. There was like four people, including, you know, his family that was there watching. And I don't think enough people realize that that's even something you can access, right? Like that's the best pitching prospect in the organization is just like back there throwing to live batters. And I'm lucky I was there to see it, because it was a treat. Honestly, he looked excellent. So it's a really cool feel in the backfield. So let's get into some of the prospects, but it is a pretty awesome place to just sit and watch some young guys work.
Well, why don't we start at the top? You mentioned Noah Schultz. Let's start with Noah Schultz and Colson Montgomery.
Yeah, those two are great. Schultz was impressive. He was really impressive. It was his first time facing live hitters. He threw about 20 pitches or so. You can find the videos on Twitter for people that want to watch them. But he was sitting 97 to 98 with that fastball having some run on it. You know, this is a guy who, I heard that he touched 99 last week actually in a pen, and has mostly been sitting around 97 or so. So it's impressive, man. I mean, when you watch Noah Schultz, it's not just the velo, it's the 6'9 frame, right? With the extension he gets and the sidearm angle of his pitching. I can't even imagine facing that, right? When you have a left-hander who's coming at you, he's coming from so close because he extends so far because of his length, and he has that sidearm funky angle. And then you factor the fact that it's moving. It's 97, but it's not flat. It's 97 with it's a sinker. It's not even, he doesn't even throw a four seam. He throws a four seam sometimes, but he primarily throws a two seam sinker that has run on it while being 97. It's really impressive. I mean, his fastball is one of the better fastballs I've seen in my life. And he's 20 years old, right? Like it's not normal stuff.
And the best slider I saw last year in the minor leagues. I mean, it is just deadly.
And on top of that, he's working on a changeup. So that was one of the cool things. The notes I heard from today, he spoke with the media earlier today. I'm gone, but I know somebody who's there. And he spoke earlier and talked about his changeup, and then he feels really good with it. And he feels equally confident in all three of his pitches. So last year, he didn't show as much of the changeup as the fastball and slider. So if he can get that changeup honed in and that pitch becomes, you know, a true third weapon for him, you're looking at a guy who has ace potential, like truly ace potential. There's a lot of work to be done. He's got to get more innings under his belt. Obviously, he only threw 27 innings last year. I believe that's the right number. But generally speaking, like watching him live, this is a guy who is really, really talented. And it's going to come down to getting him innings this year, keeping him healthy. He talked today a lot about how he just focused on his body and keeping his recovery consistent and eating well and just continuing to maintain himself, because that's a big dude and that's a lot of velo coming out of that arm. So keeping him healthy is going to be the priority this season. But really, if he gets more innings under his belt, it's hard to argue that he's not one of the top, you know, three, four pitching prospects in baseball.
Yeah. All right. And how about our top hitting prospect?
Yeah. Colson was great. I got to talk to Colson for a while in the clubhouse, which was really nice. And he's a super good dude. And just in general, he looks really comfortable. I wrote an article about that earlier today, and he just looks comfortable. He looks ready. He looks poised, and he just looks like he fits in. I think last year he said this to me. He said last year he was a little overwhelmed at times, you know, coming in at 20 years old at the beginning of spring training last year at major league camp already. He had moments where it was just a lot. And then this year he feels good. I think he just looks like he belongs. And that's something that it's hard to kind of put that in, you know, it's hard to put that in words, right? But like, you can just see a sense about him that he just fits in. He looks comfortable. He knows the guys. He has a lot of guys he played with all of last year. Like the Birmingham group is super tight. A lot of these top prospects, I mean, most of the top prospects in the organization were playing together last year in Birmingham down the stretch. So he talked about how having his buddies there and having people that he's friends with there has helped him just feel more and more comfortable, honestly, which is something that, you know, it's understated that comfort matters, right? Like it helps as a baseball player and as an athlete of any type to be around guys that you know and guys that you're friends with and guys you hang out with outside of baseball, right? And he kind of preached that and said that he just has really appreciated having his friends around and having guys that he hung out with a lot last year in the clubhouse at big league camp this year, and that there's a whole group of these players that are working together, and that just being there together and all kind of seeing their collective hard work start to pay off and having them all get a chance at big league camp has made a really big difference for him. And I think you can see it in the way that he carries himself. Beyond that, really interesting note. This is one of my favorite quotes from him from the entire trip, honestly, of all the guys I talked to. I asked him if he had worked at all in any other positions, because there's been talk over the past few years. We talked about this on the 2026 roster projection, you know, that he could move to third base. He's a 6'4 guy. He's big. He's strong. He's continuing to add strength to his body. And that's kind of a profile that a lot of people think could end up at third base. I asked him if he's tested any of your positions. He hadn't even thought about it. He was like, I haven't even thought about it. Nobody's told me anything. I'm staying at shortstop. That's where I want to be. He has not even thought about working at any other position whatsoever. He's a shortstop, and I think he wants that. And you can tell that he wants to be starting at shortstop for the White Sox very soon. And that's something that I think.
Kyle Seager, right?
Corey Seager, yeah.
Corey Seager, he wants to be. Yeah, Corey, no, you're Seager. Good. That's who he models his game after.
Yeah, and that's. And that's doable. Like, honestly, I don't want to put that expectation for him. I'm not saying he's going to be that, but like, he has the ability to be a really good player at that position. And it's going to take work, right? He was talking about how he, you know, he's got to let himself be a little more fluid. He tries to not think about his mechanics at all or anything like that, because he doesn't want to get stiff ever. He just tries to stay fluid and stay in his motion and just do what he just trust his athleticism when he's fielding it short. And that's something that, you know, it shows. He's working hard and he looks good. And his swing looks great. I watched his BP rounds and a few of the in-game stuff. He looks good. You know, this is a guy with the best approach of any minor leaguer in baseball, possibly. I mean, he had a 15% walk rate over the last year with Birmingham. Even in a season where he was kind of not fully healthy and he had to work his way back, he still maintains a super sophisticated approach. He knows how to track pitches. He knows where to find his spots. And this is someone who is going to be up this year. I'm pretty after seeing him in camp. Like, I know he just got reassigned to minor league camp today, but he's going to be up at some point. I think there's no doubt about that in my mind, that at some point this season, whether it be midseason or even later in the season, like, he's going to be up and he's going to get a chance to play shortstop for the White Sox very soon. Fantastic. So it was great to see. Yeah, it was all good things on that front.
Yeah, and that's great, because, you know, my perspective, if he's going to go to the major leagues, he's going to come through Charlotte.
Yeah, that's true. 100%.
Two number one picks. I'm curious about our most recent one, Jacob Gonzalez. The reports out of camp sound pretty promising.
Yeah, I got to talk to Jacob Gonzalez a little bit, and he was cool about kind of talking through his swing a little. He adjusted his swing. He kind of talked about that. He's changing a little bit of what he's doing with his body. So that was cool to kind of hear what he's doing and what he's working on. And it looks good so far. I didn't see a ton of him, right? And I didn't see any in-game action from him. But I got to see him on, you know, in the cages doing some cage work, and his swing looks better. He looks like he's staying inside a little bit more. He's trying to kind of work on his lower half too. That's one of the things he mentioned to me. So I think he looks good. He looks like he's making adjustments. And I think for him, it's really just going to be about getting more reps and just getting time in games with an adjusted swing to really just show the best of his abilities. So Gonzalez is someone that's going to be fun to watch this season. And I know last year was not the best for him, right? But I think it was a short sample. I don't want to put too much stock into that. And I think he's working hard, you can tell, on figuring out things about his swing and learning how to best utilize his body, because the dude can hit. We know he can hit. He hit all in college. He has a lot of experience. He talked about kind of how his college experience has helped him feel more ready for spring training and just have that developed routine. And he's someone who, with these swing adjustments, like, I just want to see where it takes him, and I want to see him in games. And I wish I got to see him a little bit more of him in terms of in-game stuff, but we're going to see a lot of him. He's probably going to get a chance in Winston, I think, off the bat. And maybe it's Canny, but I think sooner than later, because of his age, it's going to be Winston. If not to start the season, I think he'll be in Winston very soon. And he's someone that, with this new adjusted swing, it's going to be really fun to watch his development and his progress in his first full season.
So there's a really good chance we haven't seen the Jacob Gonzalez yet.
Yeah, 100%. I don't even think we've really seen any of who he is as a player and who he can be as a player. Right. I think this is going to be the year where it's like, let's just see what he's got, and let's see what the swing adjustments are doing for him. And it's going to be telling from there. But it's, you know, first professional season, right? Like, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He's working, he's making adjustments, and let's see what happens, right?
Okay. Two more hitters I want to ask you about. Yep. The first one is another guy that you and I are both high on, Brian Ramos.
Yep. Brian Ramos, he looks great, man. I mean, Ramos's energy is infectious, honestly. I knew that. I could tell that at Birmingham when I saw him this past summer, but it was so clear in the locker room. He's just a friendly guy. He always looks happy. There's very few players that look just as happy to be there as Ramos does. He just carries himself with a lot of positivity, and you can feel that, and you can see that his teammates feel that, which is really cool, because he connects with all those young guys. He makes an effort to, you know, joke around with guys, to have fun, and he just looks like someone who just really, really loves being there and playing baseball all the time. And his swing looks really good. I watched a round of his BP, and I'm telling you, I think he hit five, maybe six of the 10 pitches I saw in this one round out for homers. I mean, and all over the field too. It's not just like, not just pulling homers on the left field line, right? There was three or four in a row that were, you know, center, almost left center, but pretty much dead center field home runs. The guy has just a ton of pop. And the swing just looks clean. He looks steady. He looks smooth. The approach, you started to see kind of last year, he started to develop a little bit more sophisticated approach at the plate. And I think we're going to see more of that this season. I'm really looking forward to seeing what him in AAA looks like sooner than later. He just got optioned to Birmingham, so he is going to start the season in Birmingham. But I think he'll be in Charlotte pretty soon, honestly. I don't think he'll be more than a month or two in Birmingham. And I think, you know, if he can really continue to develop his approach and reduce his chase rate, that's going to be a guy who can impact the ball as much as anybody almost in the farm system. I think he's maybe a little bit behind Colson just because the approach is a little bit worse than Colson's right now. I think he might be, in terms of like call up, a little bit behind Colson's schedule. But I still think Ramos has a really good shot to debut this year. I think late season 2024 is a good chance. If the White Sox somehow are able to end up moving Moncada, I don't think they're going to be able to move Moncada because he has a $5 million buyout at the end of the season. So it's kind of, that complicates it a little bit. But I think if Moncada gets hurt in the later in the season, or if they find a way to move on from him, or even if they just, you know, bring Ramos up to be kind of a few days a week guy, or play in the DH role, play some first base, if Vaughn is something, I mean, there's a lot of options there. But the swing looks excellent. He just looks really good. And he looks consistent at third base too. I think the throws, he needs to still continue to work on his throwing accuracy a little bit. He has times where he can get a little bit, rush his throws a little bit and miss the target with his throws from third, but his hands look good. He looks like he's moving well at third base. He looks very just ready to go. So all good things from Ramos, and the swing, really key of all the guys. I get it's batting practice, you can't put too much stock into it, but he looked great swinging the bat.
So the last guy I want to ask you about is one of the young pups, Wolkow. Yeah. And I know you had a chance to talk to him. Did you get to see him in the cage at all? Because I thought he had, when I saw him last year in Kannapolis, and he was only there for a week or two, I thought he had a weird little hitch in his swing. I'm just wondering how he looked.
Yeah, the swing is interesting. I noticed he kind of has adjusted a little bit of his swing to be a little more one-handed. So he's rocking a little bit of a one-handed finish now, which is kind of interesting in comparison to where he was at last year. I watched him in the cage, and generally it looked good. I think that the one-handed stuff was more just kind of what he's just working on his swing. I don't know if it's a permanent adjustment at all. But in general, he looked good. I think the swing can be a little long at times still. But again, the guy is 18, right? He told me he put on 20 pounds of muscle this offseason. He already looks just huge. Standing next to him is like, wow. And he's just truly one of the most well-spoken guys in the entire organization. And he's 18 years old. And I know that's not, that doesn't result on the baseball field necessarily, but it matters, right? I think there's something to be said for being a guy who can talk to people and can just explain his mindset and his training and all those other aspects, right? And he does that. He does that really well. He's always happy to talk. He's always happy to just explain what he's doing, what he's working on, all those other aspects, right? And he's just got upside for days, right? I wasn't there for it. Unfortunately, I left before it happened, but he had a home run in a scrimmage game on Saturday that had to be 450. I mean, it was right center field. Just, he didn't even know, but none of the outfielders even flinched, moved, nothing. Like, it was, you could see the second he swung, that ball was way gone. Not just gone, but like way gone. The power is insane. It really is. And that's what, he's going to have to continue to work on that swing. I think he does get long at sometimes, and he can swing in a way where he just chases at certain things sometimes, and definitely has some swing and miss concerns. But when he barrels the ball, it's going to go far every time, and it's going to get hit incredibly hard. And considering that he's 18 years old, there's a lot of time for him to keep working, and there's a lot of time for him to continue to develop. I think it sounded to me like he may start in Arizona this spring, just to kind of give himself some more time to keep working on his swing and keep doing stuff on the backfield and all that stuff. But I think he'll be in Canny soon. I think he'll get a shot in Kannapolis this season for sure at some point. And he's someone that, in terms of upside, look no further, right? It's really hard to find someone with more upside than George Walkout. And I think it's going to be someone that I was excited. I kind of predicted the draft pick. I was excited about the draft pick, and I'm going to be watching him very closely for his entire career, because the guy is just a stand-up act as a person. And beyond that is like the upside's, an incredible power hitter. One other thing to mention with him, he told me he's working in center field, which is crazy for a guy that's 6'7". He's been practicing in the scrimmage game I watched. He was playing center field the entire game. So he kind of talked about, he's going to be an outfielder. They want him in the outfield. He's got the athleticism for it. And if he can get good at center, he'll be good everywhere. So that was kind of his mindset, was like, I'm going to play center. I'm working hard at it. And that'll help me if I can play center, I can play left and right. Cause of course, right. So yeah. Him playing center is crazy. I don't think he ends up staying there just cause he is a huge person. But if he's working there, that's a great sign moving forward. And I think if he can be even solid in center, he's going to be really good in right field and left field, wherever it ends up being. Right. He's got the arm strength for days if in a corner outfield, right? Like he can totally survive arm strength wise. And then beyond that, right, like that's a power bat that you have in the outfield moving forward. So in my opinion, top outfield prospect in the farm system, I think the upside is up there with any other hitting prospect in the organization.
Okay, cool. That's exciting. I can't wait to see him in Kannapolis. I hope it's
definitely
sooner than later. And you're right. You know, maturity matters with these young guys, right?
It plays a factor.
As they hone their craft, absolutely.
Yeah, and it just becomes – it's becoming a professional, right? Like there's a lot more to becoming a professional athlete than just on the field. And he's got that aspect of intangibles that you can't teach.
And I've told this story a million times, so I apologize if I'm repeating myself. But I met Colson Montgomery in Kannapolis before he started his season when he was just drafted. And the maturity and the confidence, you'd never know how young he was.
Yeah.
He was really impressive.
The same sense you get with Walkow for sure. And Walkow's even younger than Colson was. So it's exciting. And it's good to see someone who just is so young and already has just such a good lens about things and just a viewpoint on everything. So that was my biggest takeaway from talking to him, is just that he's just a very mature guy and is super, super determined to get to the level that he wants to get to.
All right, let's switch gears one more time because, you know, we want to be aware of.
We got a few more gears to touch on.
There are a lot of arms that I want to talk, a lot of young arms that I want to talk about. So, you know, I'll open it up to you and we can talk about a couple of our favorite guys, Cannon and Mason Adams and
Let's get into those guys. Jonathan Cannon was one of the first guys I talked to. I got to talk to him in the beginning of my trip. He looks good. He looks really solid. He looks super in shape. He's kind of has an interesting thing. So Cannon's been a guy that we've known to be someone who throws, you know, six pitches at times, right? He's always been a guy that mixes and matches and kind of just plays with a bunch of things and adjusts his arsenal throughout a game. He's kind of he's switching it up a little bit. He's super focused on four pitches. He kind of has decided to hone his craft and to focus on four things specifically, as opposed to, you know, just doing a little bit of everything. So Cannon is, let me pull this up so I don't misspeak here. But he's focused on just his, you know, his sinker, his cutter, his changeup, and his sweeper. So he's a guy who threw a curveball at times, and it was an effective curveball at times. And also used to throw a lot of four seams early in his career. But he really likes kind of the way that his sinker, cutter play off each other. And then how the sweeper is such a different motion than all of his pitches that it creates kind of it makes that more of the wipeout pitch. So he talked to me, he kind of went into detail with me when we were talking about, you know, what his different pitch mixes, and he kind of is changing a little bit. He wants his sinker to be more of his primary fastball, right? So he's working on his sinker being all over the zone, trying to throw a little bit more, you know, backdoor sinkers and make that kind of the focal point of the fastball while turning his cutter into a little bit of a sharp slider. He's taking some velo off his cutter and he's working on adding a little bit of depth to it. He kind of wants that cutter. The cutter used to be kind of one of his calling cards. And then last year it ended up getting hit kind of hard at times. So I think he is really trying to make the sinker more of the fastball pitch, the cutter more of the secondary, like slight off speed, but still have some sharpness to it. And then have that sweeper be the wipeout pitch, right? And make that into the more of the true kind of the true get you out pitch. So he's getting it a little more horizontal movement on that and just trying to continue to make that more of a strikeout pitch. And then the changeup having that kind of, you know, mix of pace, right? So I think he kind of is a, it sounds to me like he's trying to figure out just what works for him best, as opposed to just trying a lot of things and really just focusing on certain things that he knows are going to work for him. So I like to hear that. I think he sounds focused. He sounds like he's kind of getting, you know, figuring out who he is as a pitcher, which takes time, right? And I think because he's gone through the system quickly and he's going to continue to do so, he looks like someone who is focused on figuring out what he's going to look like as a major league pitcher. And that's cool to see from such a young pitcher. So very, very encouraging signs from Cannon. I didn't get to see him throw it all, but I did get to talk to him and just hear all these thoughts from him. And he definitely sounds like he's got a more honed in approach on the way he's pitching. And he's really trying to make himself the best version of himself, not just try a bunch of different things, you know?
Yeah. I talked to him in Winston, and it was probably the longest player interview I've ever done. because he's so articulate and so insightful. Yeah. I mean, he knows his pitching backward and forward and what he wants to try and do.
100%. Yeah, completely.
He's, Mason Adams? Did you see him or talk to him?
Mason Adams was awesome. I talked to Mason and I got to watch him pitch, actually, which was cool. So definitely a guy who we've both had our eye on since last season when he was kind of pitching in Canny and then made his way up all the way to Birmingham at the end of the season. But he looked excellent. I talked to him and he sounds confident. He sounds like he's just trying to kind of gain knowledge this spring and just try and learn from everybody around him and just figure out kind of where his best pitches are. And then on the backfields in the scrimmage game I watched, he was just dominant. I mean, he had a few, I saw two innings of his, he ended up throwing three, but I got to watch two of his innings on the backfield in the scrimmage game against some of the young minor league guys. And he was carving. I mean, he looked great. He looked consistent. He looked steady. He was pounding the zone. And that's just who he is, right? He's a pitcher who's not afraid to throw things over, on the plate, right? He's going to get hit at times. I think he's okay with that though. The way he approaches his pitching is just throwing his stuff and trusting it. And he throws a ton of strikes and he throws a ton of strikes in the corners of the zone and just throws everything with confidence and just looks steady. So he looks good. I think he looks like someone who is going to be, a really quick riser. He keeps moving through the system. He's going to start. I think he probably will start in Birmingham after finishing there last year. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Adams, get to Charlotte this year and maybe even debut with the team at the end of the season. But realistically, 2025 is someone, he's on that track to be a 2025 option for the big league team if he keeps trending this direction. So very curious to see him against kind of the next level of competition because he only had a few games in Birmingham. So I want to see him at that double A level and really see what he's got. But he looks confident. And he's just a guy who just throws strikes, gets the job done, and just keeps moving.
Right, right. So we know in terms of the queue to go to Chicago, it's probably Nastrini one. I'm guessing Sean Burke, if he's healthy and throwing well, number two. Maybe, there's somebody else in Charlotte like Johan Dominguez or something. But can you see – so you think Cannon and Adams have an outside shot?
I think there's a world. I think Cannon probably more likely than Adams just because he's been in the system for a year longer. I think Cannon has a shot later in the season. I think they both have a chance. Realistically, though, I think they're both 2025 options, whether it be in the rotation or as long relief potentially. They both look good, and they both are guys that just throw strikes, and that creates a high floor for them. And I think they're both pitchers that are going to have a chance to be a major leaguer, even if they're not necessarily the most dominant pitchers. Neither of them are super high with the velo. Neither of them have crazy wipeout stuff, but they both throw strikes, and they both know how to use their pitches to the best of their advantage. And that's really what it comes down to at the major league level is using your pitches to get outs and knowing how to get hitters outs with what you're working with. So I think both those guys are trending the right direction, and they're both going to get a chance pretty near future, right?
Right, right, right. And speaking of guys who are close to getting a shot, I wanted to ask you about two relievers.
Definitely.
Jordan Leisure and Prelander Baroa. What are your impressions there?
All I got to say about Jordan Leisure, another guy I got to talk to, he's a super stand-up guy, very determined, knows his stuff. I'll put it this way. The only roster decision that I would be truly upset about is Jordan Leisure not making the opening day roster. The guy, I think he would be the best closer option for the White Sox today. Really. I mean, truly. I think my mindset a few months ago was, he by the end of the season would be the closer and should be the closer by the end of the 2024 season. He should be the closer tomorrow. Honestly, I really have seen nothing that makes me think otherwise. The more that I talk to him, the more that I see what he's doing on the mound. He's been truly just dominant in spring training. I'm going to pull up these numbers for you because this is a guy who has just not been touched at all in spring training. Like it's not like, oh, he's been decent, but 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, 0.8 whip. So, I mean, five appearances now in spring training, all 1 inning appearances, only 2 total hits. So I'm,
and that's on top of a really impressive Arizona Fall League. So, yeah, really impressive stuff. I'm excited to see also what the White Sox plans are for Baroa.
Yeah, it's Baroa is another guy.
I think highly regarded.
finishing up on Leisure there. Sorry, I had a minor interruption, but Leisure, he also added the curveball. So that's something that is really important to note, because his fastball slider combination is as good as anybody's. And then you flip the other side of that, and he added a curveball in the Arizona Fall League and down the stretch last season. He sounds really confident about his curveball too. Like I went from talking with him, he not only like is like, oh yeah, I have a curveball. He likes his curveball and he feels really comfortable with it. And he thinks that because he kind of has that extra element, it changes the way that he's able to sequence things, because it plays off his fastball really well. You got the slider, which is sharp, and it's a really hard slider. So while it moves a lot, it's still kind of that hard pitch. When he's able to mix in that softer curveball that can kind of just float in there with that drop, it's such a perfect closer mix. And a fastball curveball slider guy, like it works. It really just works. Yeah. I think he should be on the opening day bullpen. And if he's not, I think he will be very soon. And I think he'll be closing games pretty soon in Chicago. Baroa, like you mentioned, another guy who the appearance I got to see him watch, he looked excellent. He's had some ups and downs this spring, but generally the stuff is amazing. Baroa is, he's just got a really interesting little double slider thing. He likes to mix and match his slider in a way that's super fascinating to me, where it's not always the same slider. He kind of throws it's almost a sweeper slider version, but it's kind of not really a sweeper. It's almost just two distinct sliders. One that's a little more sharp with a little more drop to it, and one that has a little more that horizontal kind of angle to it. So a really cool mixture of his sliders. And someone that it's going to come down to command for him. I think he's had command issues in the past, but Baroa is another guy that could be a back inning option. I think if things click, there's a world where Baroa and Leisure are going eighth, ninth inning by the end of the season. So I'm excited to see what happens with him, because he also has a lot of stuff. The stuff just jumps off the charts. And you know, Pedro Grifol spoke really highly of Baroa, talking about how he looks great, and he just has to kind of continue to find his command more and more this spring to set himself up to be, you know, in the bullpen pretty soon. So great stuff from both those guys. I think they're both going to be featured pieces of the bullpen soon, even if it's not to start the season.
Fantastic. You know, I hope we see him in Chicago, but if they come to Charlotte, that'll be interesting as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, speaking of guys who probably are going to be in Charlotte, I wanted to ask you about one last player before we run out of time. And that's
we got a few more. I want to do one or two more things too, so you go that and then we'll keep going.
I want to give you a few minutes to touch on some things, but I wanted to ask you quickly about Oscar Colas. You know, he struggled last year. Everybody knows that. When I talked to him about it, he said, "The White Sox want me to be a more patient hitter." He said, "It's just really uncomfortable." He said, "I'm an aggressive hitter." But apparently he has learned to make that change.
Yeah, it was interesting, kind of. I didn't talk to him at all directly, but Pedro Grifol spoke a lot about him in one of the press conferences and kind of went into depth on why he had, the day after he had gotten an option to minor league camp, he was one of the first guys to go down to minor league camp. So I think Grifol kind of – it was always a given he was going to start in Charlotte this year, I think, just based on what we'd heard from him and what he kind of talked about. But it's interesting. I think it sounds to me like it was – last year it was almost like he was kind of just too much going on. He was really trying to – what Grifol said is that he was kind of a, you know, 100 miles an hour guy, but he was struggling fundamentally. I didn't quite understand his exact points here that he was making in terms of Colas, but I get some of it to a degree. I think – it's that balance, right? Now he's really focused on his fundamentals, but it sounds like he's kind of lost a little bit of that aggression and that kind of energy that he played with. So it seems like they're trying to kind of find that middle ground for him, is what it sounds like, that he kind of needs to figure out how to be fundamentally sound, but also play with that athleticism and that passion that he has. It's tricky. I think he's got stuff, and it sounds like he's had a really good camp. All the talk was that he has really made improvements in his plate discipline and his defense and all these other aspects that we saw him struggle with last year, and that he's also improved his chase rate. Grifol said he was one of the better you know, hitters in camp this year at reducing his chase rate. One of the best. He said he had one of the lower chase rates among kind of the hitters in camp so far. So there's good signs, but I think he just needs that step back to just continue to focus on his game. I think this season for him is really just going to be about growing. There's a chance he'll be up with the big league team, but I think the focus early in the season is just that he needs to really find his speed of baseball and find the game and where the game kind of plays with him. That's what it sounded like to me from what I heard. So he's going to start in Charlotte. He's probably going to be there for a little while. I don't think he's going to be necessarily an early call-up just because they really want to give him that time to find his zone and just find himself as a player. They still want him to be a piece of the future. It's going to take some time, and it's going to take him figuring out, you know, what type of player he really is while also being more fundamentally clean than he was last year. So interesting stuff on Colas. I think him being in Charlotte's the right place. And I'm just hoping that he can continue to kind of just hone in on his craft, like it sounds like he's been doing so far this spring.
Well, Elijah, it sounds like it was a phenomenal experience in Arizona. Yeah. I've got a couple dozen more questions, but we're running out of time. So why don't you just take 5 minutes and wrap it up, and I've probably got a few more things in.
I think Eloy is another one that I wanted to touch on briefly. I know we talked major league guys earlier, but Eloy is someone who I feel for the guy. Hearing him talk for the first time directly and listening to his press conference and just hearing all of where he's at, kind of, he just wants to play, man. You can see it. The guy just really wants to be on the field and really just wants to hit. He just wants to hit the ball and hit at the ability he knows he can. He got asked about, you know, can he hit 40 home runs? And he was like, yeah, I can do it. I can hit 40. I can hit 300. I've done it before. And I know I can, I just got to do it. And he really stressed the fact that he's been working hard on his body and just making sure he's in the best possible shape he can be. He's so talented. He really is so talented. It's just, I am rooting for him more than I ever was, in all honesty, because you can just see that he just wants to play, and he's so sick of talking about his injuries and his stuff. And I get that, because it's tiring, right? He wants to be on the field, and he wants to hit, and he wants to just be a great player because he knows he can be. And there's a world where, like, him and Luis Robert, like, the two of them back-to-back could be so dynamic together. I mean, we know those two can hit at the highest possible levels. So I'm really excited to see what Eloy's got this year, and I'm just hoping he can stay healthy because he deserves a chance to have a fully healthy season and really show everybody what he can do ahead of his contract, you know, having options at the end of the year. So that's another one that I took notice from. In terms of one more prospect, Edgar Caro looks great, as always. I've been a big fan of his since the trade. He just looks good. Pedro Grifol talked about how his kind of budding leadership as a 20-year-old catcher is very apparent. He apparently talked to the team, like, in the clubhouse one day, a week or two ago, and just kind of addressed the entire clubhouse one day, getting people to know him a little bit and just being a leader from a young age. And it sounds like the pitchers like working with him too. Some of the young pitchers seemed like they really enjoy the work he's been doing. He cut a lot of weight this offseason. He tried to get himself a little bit more lean and agile behind the plate. He's focused on really staying mobile behind the plate because I think one of the things for him is keeping his defense work going up. So he's a great player. I'm really excited to see what he can do. And I think giving the fact that he's a catcher at his age is just – it's really promising. He's going to be opening as the catcher in Birmingham. He's going to get a chance to go up to Charlotte in the near future, I think, especially if Corey Lee ends up making his way to Chicago at some point. Edgar would then be the obvious choice to be catching every day in Charlotte eventually. I think he'll get up to Charlotte this year. I don't think he's going to be a big league guy this year, but I think he's going to be in Charlotte for a portion of this season. You'll get to see him there, and I think that he's going to have a shot to be the 2025 catcher, at least part-time catcher in 2025 for the Sox. Last thing. Yeah. Any thoughts on those?
No, go.
Before we, I know we're going long and everybody's going to have to bear with us for an hour episode this week, but, in terms of the bench, another thing that last takeaway was the bench spots. I know it's been kind of a lot of talk about who could end up filling in the bench for the White Sox. It sounds like obviously one of Stassi and Maldonado, whoever's the backup catcher, that's one spot that leaves three bench spots available. It seems to me like there's going to be one power lefty. I think Mike Moustakas is going to get the spot over Gavin Sheets, to be honest. That's kind of the sense I got, and I can see it going either way, but there's only room for one of them. And I think Moustakas's veteran kind of presence is appealing, and Sheets still has an option on his contract. So he still has a minor league option. So I kind of think Gavin Sheets starts in AAA, and Mike Moustakas ends up being the bench lefty bat. I could still see Sheets making it. He's had a pretty solid spring. It's not about him being bad. I just think Moustakas is kind of – I think they like the presence he has. So one of those two, not both of them. It's pretty clear that there's no world where both of them make the roster. So if it ends up being Sheets, then Moustakas probably opts out of his contract and tests if he can get a role anywhere else. And then on the other side of things, I think – It sounds to me like the outfield spot is going to be Kevin Pillar. Kevin Pillar is a non-roster invite, you know, veteran guy. It seems like he has the inside track to be the fourth outfielder and kind of split right field with Dominic Fletcher off the bat and have some reps in right, and then, you know, be a backup guy that can play center for Luis if he needs to, play left for Benintendi on certain days here and there, right? So it seems like Pillar might be that guy. I think Zach DeLoach is going to have a shot at some point to get outfield reps. He looked really good. I saw him get a double off Tyler Glasnow in a backfield game. That was really impressive. He talked to me about how he's really focused on line drives. He hit too many fly balls last year and he really wants to focus on a live drive swing. And then in the B game that I watched, he had a double off Glasnow and then another drive single later in the game, both just hard hit line drives. The guy can really hit the ball well, just chases sometimes a little too much. So DeLoach, even if Pillar makes that spot, I think DeLoach will have a shot at some point. And then that last spot comes down to utility and just an infielder. I want to see Braden Shumate get the spot, honestly. I wouldn't be opposed to Danny Mendick. It sounds to me like Lenin Sosa is sort of out of the running at this point. I was kind of surprised by that because I did think he would have a shot coming off of last year, but it doesn't seem like he's had the best camp. And it sounds like in terms of, you know, finding a guy that can defensively be strong at all three infield spots off the bench and just provide a little more reliability, it seems like Shumate or Mendick would be the two most likely players to fill that backup infield spot. I'd like to see Shumate do it, honestly. I talked to him too. Really good guy. You know, strong defensively. Shumate is excellent defensively. He's worked at kind of, he's really comfortable at short and second, and he started working at third base this spring. He was talking about how he's kind of trying to get comfortable at third base to be able to provide that versatility. So I would like to see Shumate get the spot, but I could see it going either way with him or Mendick at this point for that, you know, backup infield spot.
Wow. I'm just sitting here thinking it could be 2023 all over again, you know, or 2022 with Gavin right. Sheets, Oscar Colas, Lenin Sosa, Zach Remillard, Mark Payton, but Carlos Perez. I mean, all these guys have spent so much time in Charlotte. I feel for them.
Yeah, it's tricky, but this is a situation with this roster where there's a lot of good options. It's not really – it doesn't feel as much like – finding just having to fill the roster as it does, like, there's competition. There's truly competition for some of these bullpen spots, for some of these bench spots, for the final rotation spots. Like, there is competition in camp and guys who are performing well enough to earn a spot, right? So I think I could see it either way. If I had to make a prediction right now, I would go the bench being Stassi, Moustakas, Pillar, and Shumate, maybe, I think would be my prediction now. But I could see Mendick. I could also see Sheets still getting the spot over Moustakas. Could go different directions there, but that's kind of where I would have it right now. And then in terms of the bullpen, we'll wrap on this and finish up. I know this is a long one for sure, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about, so we gotta talk about it. But in terms of the bullpen, it's just I don't even know. I mean, honestly, there's really from listening to stuff and from watching, there's about 13 guys that could fill in bullpen spots. It's really a lot of things up in the air, honestly. I think there's a few that have, you know, John Brebbia, I got to watch him throw a bullpen. He's coming off of kind of a little minor injury at the beginning of camp. He looks good. He looks ready to be in the bullpen on opening day. I think he's going to be one of the featured guys. Tim Hill will be in the pen. I think Crochet will start in the pen. I'm hoping Leisure is starting in the pen. Beyond that, I think Dominic Leone of the non-roster guys has kind of stood out a little bit more than some of the other guys. You know, Jesse Chavez has struggled. Brian Shaw has struggled a little bit. Some of those older guys have definitely struggled a little. So there's just a lot of openings in the bullpen. I could see Alex Spies went down to minor league camp, so it sounds like he's not going to crack. Spies needs a little more time in AAA, I think. There's a lot of guys that could crack the bullpen. It's really up in the air, and that's part of why I think Leisure needs to be in there, because he's just been nothing but impressive. But there's really a lot of battles. And in general, Jeff, I feel good about this season. I think there's things to be excited about. It doesn't mean the team's going to be great. It doesn't mean it's all going to be pretty. There's going to be some ugliness. But in general, there's a good energy at the clubhouse. There's an underdog mentality. And there's a lot of players that are fighting to be there and fighting to have a role on the team.
Fantastic. Great stuff. All right, let's wrap this up. But it was great hour, a lot of fun.
Yeah, we hope everybody enjoyed hearing all this stuff. Definitely go check out my Twitter, ElijahEV8. You can look through all my different spring training quotes and videos and such. You can follow my co-host Jeff at AAAJeff. He will be having excellent minor league content coming soon. You know, Charlotte's going to be kicking off in a few weeks, so Jeff will be there. He'll be visiting Canny and Winston as well throughout the season. So Jeff's going to have a ton of minor league content, and we will.